Pipelines have been a hot topic in Michigan in recent years. Very recent developments suggest the issue is intensifying. Canada's Enbridge is part of a proposal to install about 600 miles of new interstate natural gas pipelines. About 150 miles of those pipelines would run through Michigan. Besides arousing environmental concerns over a possible pipeline rupture, the proposal affects homeowners whose properties were, not long ago, previously disrupted by another Enbridge project. Concerns have also grown recently about the company's 61-year-old oil pipeline that runs through the Straits of Mackinac. Last week, a University of Michigan study explored several gloomy scenarios if that line broke. These concerns are all, of course, in the wake of 2010's oil pipeline rupture near Marshall, the country's largest inland oil spill. For its perspective on these most recent developments, we welcome a board member of a group that promotes pipeline safety, quote, through education, advocacy, increased access to information and partnerships, unquote. The group is the Pipeline Safety Trust. Beth Wallace is also a consultant to environmental groups on pipeline safety issues. Beth Wallace, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us more. Let's start with the natural gas pipeline proposal here. Tell us more about that. How far along is this proposal?
Sure. It's Energy Transfer. It's called E.T. Rover Pipeline. It runs from about Pennsylvania through Ohio, Michigan, and then back into Canada. It's very much an export pipeline. It's at the beginning of the process, they have barely even filed paperwork with the Energy Regulatory Agency, FERC, who will be overseeing their application. So we have a year, maybe two, of the application process, which will have public comment periods, hearings, and opportunities for landowners to voice opposition.
And FERC will clarify, Federal Energy... You referred to FERC,
yes,
correct?
Yes, it's a federal agency that oversees natural gas pipelines.
Okay, very good. And this is an export pipeline. What exactly does that mean? Does that mean that the gas going through it will not be consumed by...
That's actually a question up in the air. There's a couple diversion points, two of which are in Michigan, possibly one in Ohio, where there will be a product either being refined of some sort or consumed, very little, but most of it is going right back into Canada.
And a 600-mile pipeline altogether, about a quarter of it running through Michigan. Tell us more about E.T. Rover and Enbridge here and their collaboration.
Sure. The collaboration actually began a year ago when Energy Transfer had a natural gas pipeline that fed Michigan's market with gas. It was called Trunkline Pipeline, and they filed application with the federal agency FERC to have it decommissioned so Enbridge could take over and push oil south. So they decommissioned that pipeline, and Enbridge is now acquiring that pipeline to push oil south. Now, the original pipeline fed Michigan with gas, and the governor and several senators came out in opposition saying, you're removing a huge source of gas for the state of Michigan. And Energy Transfer came back and said, no, you guys have an oversupply. It's fine. We can shut down this pipeline and turn it into an oil pipeline. That's okay. And then they said this to FERC, and FERC went along with it. Now, a year later, they're coming back to FERC and saying Michigan actually does not have enough gas in the market, and we need to build a brand new pipeline. So there's a controversy there and something that definitely needs to be sorted out. And if I were a landowner facing a third, even maybe a fourth pipeline on my property, I would be fuming about this concept.
But Enbridge and E.T. Rover are justifying this project by saying that more natural gas needs to be into the system in Michigan and in these other areas.
And so the big controversy here is that they're saying it's a public necessity, a public need now. But a year ago, they were saying it's not a public necessity. It's not a public
just
need.
Just 1 year ago?
Yes. And so that they're acquiring land. That's how they obtain eminent domain. It's a land grab for private companies. They take public land or private land from landowners, and they say it's for the public necessity. Now, the question here, is it actually for public necessity or is it for private profit?
Well, how will local residents be affected then?
They are the ones that are taking all the risks. So their land is being taken, again, from an energy company for private profit and ripped up. I'm talking hundreds of trees in some cases. I would talk to many landowners who just went through the Enbridge Line 6B replacement expansion, and they had 900 trees knocked down, huge amounts of property torn up. They're still going through restoration, and they just got this letter for a brand new pipeline, so they could be going through the entire process again. And this is not a small pipeline. This is a 42-inch pipeline in most places, which is a huge natural gas pipeline. If there were to ever be any kind of leak or explosion, it would be an amazing catastrophe for a landowner, for communities. And so there's just some very heavy questions for FERC on how well they're paying attention to Energy Transfer's arguments.
Is your group suggesting that the existing network, the existing pipeline infrastructure is adequate?
I think there's some game playing here. I don't think that this is a pipeline that's going to benefit the state of Michigan or Ohio. I think this is mostly an export pipeline that's going back into Canada.
And rupture is the main risk here, correct?
Oh, definitely. Yep. And it'll be right next to oil pipelines that are already in operation. So what is the risk there? Obviously, people are losing land.
Where does the responsibility for the regulatory and safety controls of the pipeline break down in terms of federal, state, local government entities? Is there much local communities can do?
You can do stuff at the county level. The zoning can have an impact on how this pipeline gets in place. So there is opportunity for very local, but mostly the way this is going to be permitted and the eminent domain issue is at a federal level with FERC. They will issue whether this is for public necessity or not.
Many millions of people rely on oil and natural gas for all kinds of important uses, to heat their homes, to drive their cars. In general, Beth, how should oil and gas get from where it's drilled to where it's needed, if not through pipelines?
Oh, I'm not advocating against pipelines. It's very much a safe way to transport product. My issue is this a public necessity? Is this needed? And is this the direction Michigan, Ohio should be going? Or should we be focusing on producing very local energy, renewable energy? Where does this end, I guess, is my point. This is going to be, again, the third or fourth pipeline on people's property. And the question is this actually a necessity for Michigan? Is this what we need? And I would say even for the nation, if FERC really looks at what this pipeline is doing, it is exporting into Sarnia.
Let's move up to the Mackinac Straits here now. A video animation released last week from the University of Michigan models what would happen if there were a leak in the pipeline underneath the straits. You co-authored a report on the pipeline back in 2012 about its potential hazards. How serious is this situation in your view?
I think it's incredibly serious, and it's not just serious for the crossing at the Straits of Mackinac. The entire pipeline is 61 years old. The line on land has had many issues, including a major explosion in Crystal Falls. There's a oil leak that eventually they had to catch on fire because it caused a gas bloom. So this pipeline has had a history of failure. And how is Enbridge maintaining it? Why aren't they not being transparent with the public? People are asking very thoughtful questions. They're very well educated at this point, and the transparency is just non-existent.
Enbridge claims that they monitor the pipeline in ways that they have not monitored it in the past, that it is fit for service. They point to an incident-free record here. Mm-hmm. How is the public supposed to put that in context here?
Well, I mean, just look at the facts. There's a great resource that's actually going live in the next couple of days. It's called Oil and Water Don't Mix, and it gives Enbridge's history in the region on the Lakehead system, and you can see that they have had a history of failure. Right after the Kalamazoo River oil spill, the National Transportation Safety Board came out with a scathing report on Enbridge's history and their inability to listen to regulators on how they should be improving their system. And so I think the facts speak for themselves, and they can tout their safety record as much as they want, but when they're not willing to give actual detail and the integrity of the pipeline, it makes people wonder and question, and I'm happy that that's happening.
In the Crystal Falls incident you referred to, is that a part of the line that runs through the Straits?
Yes, Line 5 runs in the Upper Peninsula through the Straits and the Lower Peninsula and out into Sarnia. It's an export pipeline. And Crystal Falls, it happened in 1999. It was, I think, 36,000 gallons that spilled, caused a gas plume in a low wetland area, and they decided to ignite it. It burned for several hours. And that was the only way they could control that spill. There's also, through FOIA information for this pipeline, we know that there are thousands of anomalies. These are cracks, dents on this pipeline. Where are they located? How are they being monitored? How are they being fixed? None of this information I'm just being transparent about. And I was also with the National Wildlife Federation when they did a dive on this pipeline at the Straits of Mackinac last summer, and we discovered that there's so much growth on the pipeline. How are they able to do external inspections when there's so much growth? There's also original brackets that have rusted away, which indicates that there's corrosion, and the pipeline actually suspends in a lot of locations. How is it being anchored down? Is it being anchored down? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of questions, and they're just not being forthcoming.
If people want to learn more, if our listeners want to learn more about this issue, where should they go?
They should go to the, I host a blog or a journal. It's called surfgreatlakes.org. There's also a great blog called the Line 6B Citizens blog. And obviously the Pipeline Safety Trust has all of this information on their website.
Beth Wallace has been our guest. She is a consultant to environmental groups on pipeline safety issues and serves on the board of the Pipeline Safety Trust. Beth Wallace, thank you.
Thank you so much.